Are you convinced? There's probably no doubt in your mind now that monkeys are indeed leaping in even the best organizations. And some of them are so nebulous that they're almost impossible to avoid. Incomplete staff work, for example. If you get incomplete work from someone, you've got the monkey. You either have to do the work yourself, send it back, ignore it, procrastinate it, or whatever. There are solutions, right ones and wrong ones. And up till now, you've heard only the problems. But how about some solutions? Let's rejoin the session as Hal points the way.
Well, welcome back to the Monkey Show. Did you see anybody you know in that little routine? If you saw yourselves a little bit, don't worry about it. All I can say is, welcome to the club. Happens to the best of us. I told the group this morning that I did this for a group of the YPO. Are you familiar with them? Young President's Organization? And to be a member of that, you got to be, I think, under 40 when you join it, and president of a company doing $10 million business in more years. And so I did it for them, and there was a guy who was playing the role Lorraine is playing. And everybody else in the room that day was having a great time, all except this guy. And he sat there the whole morning. And I said, oh, my God, what have I done to him? So at the coffee break, I asked him, I said, hey, well, I forgot what his name is, but I said, what's the matter? He said, I got two sons of bitches just like that. And he went to coffee break, but he didn't drink coffee. He said he went out there and he sent monkeys through the telephone lines. Oh. Well, we're going to get back to Monday morning with these four people here, and it's going to be a very emotional thing. But before we do, I'd like to explore a couple of questions with. The question is this. If subordinate imposed time is bad for everybody, which I think you probably agree it is, and it happens to the best of us sometimes, then why does it happen? Why do bosses unnecessarily pick up subordinate's monkeys? Now, sometimes it's necessary to work one of your subordinate's monkeys. I mean, if an emergency is going on, your people aren't trained yet, sometimes it's necessary. But why do some bosses do it, maybe all of us at times, unnecessarily? And why do subordinates give up their monkeys unnecessarily? Let's look at this from both points of view, boss and subordinate, because you all play both roles. First, a boss. Let me ask you this. If somebody in this audience were to accuse me, Hal, of picking up my subordinates' monkeys and doing their work for them unnecessarily, how do you suppose my own self-respect would demand that I respond? Would I, on the one hand, do you think, defend myself? Or on the other hand, do you think I would join my accuser and criticize myself? Defend or criticize? Oh, probably defend it. If I defended it, how would I do that? Would I give you, on the one hand, rationalizations for picking up their monkeys? And you know what a rationalization is. An intellectually respectable reason for doing something you got to be out of your mind to be doing.
One of the best rationalizations I ever heard was told to me by a fella recently who was explaining why he reads Playboy magazine. He said, Burroughs, I read Playboy for the same reason I read National Geographic. He said, you get to see color pictures of places you ain't never going to visit.
Would I give you my accusers' rationalizations, or would I give them the real reasons I'm picking up these monkeys unnecessarily? Which? Probably rationalizations. But let's look at both of those. First, rationalizations, then real reasons. What are some of the rationalizations you've heard that bosses would give for doing their subordinates' work? And many of these rationalizations, I've heard them all. I've probably used them all. So have you. You've heard them. What are some you've heard? I can do it myself faster than I can tell somebody else. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's a rationalization.
I want it done right.
The most famous one of all. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Of course, what are you teaching your people when you do it yourself? You got to do it yourself next time. Yes. This is an emergency. Really? Yeah. Now, sometimes that's true, and you got to do it. Sometimes. See, these couldn't be used as rationalizations unless they were also sometimes true. Well, let me just mention a couple of other rationalizations, and we'll get to these real reasons. I heard one like this one time. Somebody says, the reason I do it, Burroughs, is I just want to keep my hand in. This has to be a rationalization. Why? Why do people want to keep their hands in other people's work? I'll tell you a powerful reason. It's called self-preservation. And if you can't cut it on your job, at least you're qualified for somebody else's. But listen, if that's the reason you're keeping your hand in other people's work, what kind of work should you obviously keep your hand in? Lower-paying work or higher-paying work? Higher, of course, keep your hand in your boss's job. Then if you get fired from yours, at least you're qualified for his or hers. Another rationalization goes like this. Somebody told me one time, said, all right, Burroughs, I pick up my subordinates' monkeys every now and then. I'll tell you why I do it. He said, I don't want to ask my subordinates to do anything I'm not willing to do myself. This has to be a rationalization, as any manager of a chicken farm can tell you. The hens will not lay for a guy can't lay two eggs a day himself. Let's flip the coin over real quickly. Look at some of the real reasons a boss might pick up subordinates' monkeys unnecessarily. What are some of the real reasons? Lack of ability to delegate. Don't trust. You could use that one either way. Don't trust the board. Not only don't trust the boss doesn't trust subordinates, but the boss doesn't trust whom else? Maybe himself. There was another real reason. We like to do some of this stuff. A lot of us came to hear from here, so we already know that stuff and like it pretty well. Yeah. Another real reason we pick up monkeys is a very human thing. We like, as human beings, instant feedback, fast feedback. You like to know right away. It's something you do, right? You take a test in college, you don't want to wait 6 months to find out what you got. That makes you nervous. Well, in vocational work, for example, like a secretary typing something, you know, or building a house or something, you got instant feedback, you know, right away. But when does the feedback come in management? Instantly? Oh, no. Quarterly report, annual report. Matter of fact, as Mary told you, I was a manager for the IBM company for 10 years. And one time I went home, and my wife, who's kind of a devil sometimes, said to me this. Now, how would you answer your spouse this question? She said to me this. Hey, Hal. Tell me something. How far ahead is IBM because you went to work today? I gave her a good managerial answer. I said, I don't know, Alice. Let me think about that, and I'll get back with you. That was 15 years ago. I never did get back with her because you don't know as a boss how far ahead your company is because you go to work one day. You don't. No way to find out. But in vocational work, you got that instant feedback. Well, a lot of real reasons, lack of ability to delegate. Delegation is one of the toughest of all human arts, and some of the brightest people in the world go through a whole career and never learn to delegate. So if you can't delegate, sometimes we pick up their monkeys. A lot of these real reasons a boss will pick up a monkey every now and then, not necessarily from a subordinate. We wouldn't admit a lot of these reasons to people, although I did hear somebody one time admit one of the real reasons. He said, Hal, the reason I pick up these monkeys is I think my subordinates are entitled to watch genius in action. Well, that's why bosses might pick up monkeys. Let me ask you this. Why would subordinates give up monkeys unnecessarily? Now, I'd like to suggest to you that that is basically the result on subordinates' parts, and we all play subordinates' roles, too. They give up monkeys basically out of two bad habits. Number one, which is subordinates who have developed a habit of asking their bosses what to do about their jobs, and subordinates who have developed habits of waiting till their bosses tell them what to do, taking no initiative. Now, you don't do that with your boss, I hope, if you can possibly avoid it, do you? I mean, you got something new coming up in your job, what do? I bet you, as a pro, you operate way up here above this line, for example. You got something new, you probably just go ahead and do this thing on your own if you think your boss's anxieties can possibly stand it, right? Give your boss a footnote in your quarterly report, routine reporting. If you think your boss can't stand that, then you drop down one freedom level here to a number two and you say, well, I'll do it, but I'll keep my boss informed right away because he's a little more anxious. Or if you think your boss can't stand that one as a pro manager, what you do is you don't ask your boss what to do. You think it out ahead of time, I hope, and go in with some recommendations and try to sell your boss as to what ought to be done about your job. Now, so you try to avoid, as a pro, number four and five down there, and avoid those two things like the plague. Let me make a recommendation to you. Ask your boss anything. Ask your boss about his health. Ask your boss about his family. Ask your boss about station policy. Ask your boss about company priorities. Ask your boss anything, but for heaven's sake, never ask your boss what to do about your job. Because if you ask your boss what to do about your job, two things can happen, and they're both horrendous. What if you ask your boss what to do about your job, and he don't know? That's the monkey for your boss, right? More than you ask your boss what to do, he doesn't know. You're giving your boss a monkey he probably didn't want in the first place, you know, figuring out an answer to your question. You generally hate the people who are the source of all your problems, right? Your boss will hate you for giving him this monkey. But you'll hate your boss because all the while your boss has got your question, hasn't figured out an answer to it. You'll hate him because he's behind on your work. Do you follow that one? Oh, but what if you ask your boss what to do and he does know? Now, that could be almost as bad. You ask your boss what to do, he knows what to do, he'll tell you what to do, and you may not like the answer. I don't know how many people have told me. He said, Burroughs, I can't work for my boss. He don't know what he wants. And I said, you're complaining? What an opportunity for freedom. Which kind of boss would you pros rather have? A boss who knows in great detail every minute everything he wants, or a boss who knows some general directions but no details? General directions. For the same reason a clerk in a department store, any salesperson, loves to see a customer come in the door loaded with money but no brains. Because if a customer don't know what he wants but got a lot of money, then the salespeople can locate his innermost needs and wants and drives and desires. They can get in a little creative selling with that person, right? So look, Gail, if you got an idiot for a boss, don't screw it up. You never had it so good. Your boss needs questions, which are monkeys from you, about what to do about your job, like you need questions from your subordinates, which is like a giraffe needs a sore throat. And what if, let me pick on somebody here. What if, Randy, I don't know Randy, but let's make him an amateur manager for just a minute. And let's say his subordinates are coming in every day giving him monkeys, asking him what to do, stuff they should be thinking up. What if he is amateur enough to tell them stuff they should be thinking up? Watch this. They say, what do you want to do about that, Randy? He tells them. Now watch. Easy for them. Hard for him. He took the risk and the responsibility and the thought. Dr. Skinner said, the famous Harvard psychologist, behavior that's rewarded is reinforced. What you reward, you get more of. What did he just reward in his subordinates? Question asking, non-thinking behavior. You reward that in your people long enough, and you'll develop in them the best damn bunch of question-asking non-thinkers you ever saw. Now, what's the tragedy of that? They got all the questions. He's got all the answers. Then he's up in Toronto one day on Yonge Street walking across there, and a beer truck runs over him and kills him. What is the station lost? Everything. The only guy with all the answers. But what if, like the pro I hope Randy is, when his people come in there to give him monkeys, you know, monkeys they should be handling, they say, what do you want to do about that, Randy? And they ask him a question. He asks them a question back, which is what? What do you think you should do? Now watch this. They come in with a question. They go back out with a question. Muttering under their breath. Well, that was a hell of a waste of time. Now what? Now watch this. What's the value of this? He's got all the questions now. They're out there finding all the answers. Then a beer truck runs over him and kills him at lunch. What is the station lost? Nothing. See, all the answer finders are still alive. And what do you call that condition where your people are out there finding their own answers? I call that self-reliance. Any correlation between self-reliance and morale? Almost 100%. You ask your boss anything except what to do about your work. Also, you avoid this one down here. Let me make this recommendation to you. Avoid these two things in yourself. Why do you avoid waiting for your boss to tell you what to do? Because your boss will begin to see you as a problem, that's why, and it won't be to your advantage, and you'll have something happen to you like I saw happen one time, and that was with Georgia here. Say, Georgia, she's in a number five position, taking no initiative, and she should have been doing something over here, and I called her in one day, and I said, hey, Georgia, tell me something. What you got going on in this area over here? Of course, I know she's not doing anything, but she should be. There's a slight pause while she thinks up something to say. She said, oh, hell, I'm really working hard on that one. I said, I'll bet you are. What do you got going on? She said, what do you mean, what have I got going on? Oh, well, I said, do you have any evidence in this thing that there's something happening? Evidence I could see? She said, evidence? What do you mean evidence? Well, I said, Georgia, it's like when you walk down the beach in the summertime, you leave footprints in the sands of time. Usually in an organization when somebody does something, even if it's just thinking, leave some kind of evidence, you know, write a report, make a phone call. You got any evidence on this thing? She said, hell, I don't know what the devil you're talking about. I said, well, Georgia, maybe this will explain it. Now, Eugene, I happen to know, likes to hunt deer. Suppose I were to go in the woods early one morning, Georgia, to hunt some deer, and as I go in the woods, I see Eugene coming out, dragging a deer. Now, that's some evidence. There's some in there, right? Furthermore, suppose I were to say to him, hey, Eugene, where are all the deer? If he were to say back to me, Burroughs, the woods are full of deer, I would classify that answer as bullshit. Well, I know the woods are full of deer. That's why I came hunting. But if, on the other hand, he were to take me by the hand, lead me, you know, into the woods, show me some deer tracks, indicated a deer went by here recently, now that would be operational data, evidence that I could use to hunt the deer. So, Georgia, what you're telling me about this area and your job over here is there ain't no deer tracks, right? She said, well, I guess you want to look at it like that. Now she's getting upset, and I see I went too far. I got to calm her down a little. I said, now, Georgia, don't get upset. Now, after all, Georgia, I'm not trying to evaluate your performance. I'm merely trying to locate it. Why do you laugh? I know why you laugh. You have been there. And I got to admit to you, I have been there with you. Have you got any idea how many managers in American and Canadian business and government are trying to evaluate performance that doesn't even exist? Or if it exists, it's invisible. Now, I don't know about you, but I have a hard time evaluating invisible performance. And if it's invisible, what do you have to assume about it? Well, yeah, I mean, if you go in the woods and there aren't any deer tracks, what do you assume about the deer? Either they fly. Or else you got some insidious deer going through the woods covering up their tracks. Or what? There ain't none. And Benjamin Franklin's grandfather covered that in a statement he made many years ago. I hope you'll never forget. He said this: anything you're doing that your boss can't see isn't happening. Well, that's why you avoid number 5 down there. So let me ask you this quick question now, and we're going to get back to Monday morning. If it's good for you as a professional person to avoid these two things in your relationship with your bosses, what does that say about your subordinates in their relationship with you? Same or different? Exactly the same. So now I got a recommendation for you. Discourage these two things. That's where monkeys come from, both of these freedoms, 4 and 5. Discourage in them. How do you do that? Well, now we're going to be back to Monday morning with my subordinates here. Let me tell you what you're going to see happen so you can keep up with us here. You remember where I left this little monkey story? I had gone to work Saturday morning, committed to do their work for them. I met the blithe spirit. She converted me into a pro, just like that, like Saul of Tarsus on the road to Damascus. I had divine revelation. I went home, had a wonderful weekend. Now it's Monday morning. I'm going to give them their monkeys back. That's the first thing you're going to see happen. Give them their monkeys back. And the second thing you'll see happen is I now have the job of coaching them into pros. See, the blithe spirit made me one, a pro. Now, I've got to make them pros. It's to my advantage as well as theirs. So here I come on Monday morning. I walk in. I know what's going to greet me here on Monday morning. Same thing that greets me every Monday morning for my whole career. These 4 pros lined up outside on a clothesline, ready to ask me in unison like the Westminster Boys Choir, how's it coming? Monday morning, there they are. There they sit. But as I get close enough to these people to see the whites of their eyes, I realize that on this had to have been a divine revelation over the weekend. Couldn't have been a work of the flesh. Because I tell you, when I left here Friday, you remember that? I hated their guts. But now Monday, I realize I love them dearly. Matter of fact, I love them so much on Monday, I had to restrain myself from giving sloppy expression to my sentiments. Hate on Friday, love on Monday. How could that happen? Why'd I hate them so much on Friday? I'll tell you why. I saw these people as the source of all my problems, and you generally hate the people who are the source of all your problems. Why do I love them so much on Monday? They're the only solutions. I can see in each one of their backs a potential repository for several monkeys. The monkey density is going to decrease by 75%. Monkeys per back, that's monkey density. That's physics talk, right? Got them all on my back. Now I'm going to spread them over 4 backs. But now listen, here's something you should always remember in your dealings with your spouses, your kids, any other human being. Any sudden change in your behavior will upset people, even if the change in your behavior is to their advantage. It'll upset people if it's sudden. Now, I don't want to upset these 4 people, so I try to walk by them on Monday morning and play it straight, you know, not let them know anything new is afoot. But man, they saw, as I walked by, they saw written in my eyeballs a cheery good morning. They've never seen that there before. And that sudden change in my behavior so upset these 4 people that they all burped in chorus. I walked into my office and I sat down. Mabel, my secretary, saw me forget to do something I haven't forgotten to do in years. I forgot to shut my door. That sudden change in my behavior so upset Mabel that she punctuated their chorus of burps with a burp of her own. Now I want you to observe this. I have walked into my office Monday morning, have not yet said one single word, and yet the whole office is a shambles. Merely confirms what the Bible says. By their deeds shall ye know them, and not by their baloney. You teach by your deeds. I walked in there, I sat down, and I said, Mabel, who's first? She couldn't believe her ears. Mr. Burroughs, she said, you mean to say you actually want to see somebody? I said, Mabel, don't you toy with me. I never want to see somebody so bad in all my life. Who's first? She said, well, I guess Lorraine is first. She was here at 3 a.m. to get head of the line. I said, send in Lorraine. Lorraine comes in. Let me tell you about Lorraine. Tremendous gal, man. I mean, she would rather see the jaws of hell open up and swallow her up and that our region should look bad compared to other regions. And she knows if I don't start doing something, quit procrastinating, we're going to look bad. And she comes in and she said, look, Burroughs, you remember 3 weeks ago we had this order of our products over there to Sears, and Sears said they didn't order it, didn't want it, and I didn't ask you what to do about it, Burroughs. She said, and you told me to tell the truck drivers to take a coffee break. She said, Burroughs, that was 3 weeks ago. He said, could we give them a little solid food, you know, a hamburger? She said, Burroughs, they call me up every week. What are we going to do with this stuff? I have to tell them it's in there on Burroughs' desk. That man never could make a decision. She said, Hal, you got to do something. Boy, she is really raging. Well, I sit there and let her talk herself out and get all her emotions out on the table. And when she finishes, she slumped back in her chair, dissolved in her own sweat. And when she finished, I said to her this, Lorraine, you may not believe this, but I'm a lot more broken up by this problem than you are. For some reason, she didn't believe it. She said, you are? I said, oh, yes, Lorraine. And not only that, I know just what to do about it. She said, what is that? And with that, I pulled out of my pocket all these 15 scraps of paper, monkeys I'd picked up from her over the past week. Decisions I said I would make for her, but really she should have been making for herself, recommendations. 15 of them. And like confetti, I let them dribble down here in front of her on my desk. She said, what is all this stuff? I said, Lorraine, don't you recognize these? These are the 15 decisions you asked me to make. She said, well, I see that. What do you want me to do with all this stuff? I said, what do I want you to do with that stuff? The possibilities are unlimited. But one of a boss's jobs is narrow down the possibilities. You've got to admit this is a messy pile, so the first thing I'd like you to do is neaten it up a little bit. Get yourself 16 3x5 cards. And transfer each one of these decisions off the scrap of paper in my handwriting onto a 3x5 card in your own handwriting. And the only ability that will require is the ability to translate back to the original tongue. I mean, they came from you, or have you forgotten? She said, yeah, okay. I said, then, now watch this. I'm going to give Lorraine the simplest job you can imagine. You can't imagine a simpler job. Nevertheless, she is still a victim of her past amateur habits. You're going to still see her let her monkey leap over here at me, but I'll bat it back. Keep in mind this simple job. I said, Lorraine, when you finish transferring onto the 16 3x5 cards, then what I'd like you to do is throw away the scraps of paper and then take those 16 3x5 cards and deal that pile into two piles. One pile containing decisions you think you ought to make, the other pile containing decisions you think I ought to make, and when you finish that, you'll have two piles, right? She said, not necessarily. I said, oh, I hadn't thought of that. You will have two piles. Our friendship depends on it. She said, yeah, okay. She knows how she's going to get me anyway. I said, now, Lorraine, by when do you think you could have those cards dealt into the two piles? She said, well, hell, with everything else I got to do, that's going to take me till at least Wednesday morning. I said, well, that's fine with me. So I picked up my desk calendar, and I leafed ahead to Wednesday morning, and I wrote in there this, 9 a.m. Wednesday, be here. Lorraine is going to show up with the piles. Lorraine turns to leave my office, and as she does, I see a sight that's rejuvenating my nervous system. That's a sight I haven't seen in years. What do I see as she leaves? 16 monkeys screwed squarely between her shoulder blades for care and feeding. And watch this now. For two whole days, Lorraine won't be frustrated waiting for me. For two whole days, I won't be guilty because I owe her something. For two whole days, I'll owe her nothing, and she'll owe me everything. And guess what I'm going to do several times these 2 days just for therapy? Not information, just therapy. I'll stick my head in her office and I'll say, hi, Lorraine, about those monkeys, how's it coming? This is what you call job enrichment for bosses. I'll ask her, how's it coming? And she'll tell me how's it coming, but I won't even hear her reply because long before she answers, I'll be skipping down the hall. I don't care how's it coming. I just want to ask a question once in a while. Mary told me something. We've got to be finished by 3:30 as soon as we can. And I'm going to try to do that because I have a congenital problem. My father before me had it, and his father before him had it. When the money runs out, laryngitis sets in. So, well, I give her monkeys back, her monkeys back, her monkeys back, him his monkeys back. Now let's take educational advantage of what's happened to me here. Watch this. Here I sit in my office on Monday morning after the divine revelation. I got privacy, no monkeys, no people. I got accessibility, my door is open. Now, they may be overworked for the time being. I hope not. I hope you don't try to overwork your people. I hope not. They may be, though, because I gave them these monkeys back pretty fast. But listen to this. Any doctor will tell you this. Overwork never killed anybody. It didn't. What's the first thing people do when they get overworked? They fall asleep. Then they die. It's the sleep that killed them, not the overwork. But any doctor will tell you this. This stuff right here, frustration, kills thousands of people every year. So look, Randy, if you want to kill your people, don't waste your time trying to work them to death. Frustrate them to death. Get all their monkeys in your office, lock them up. That'll get them every time. But now they got their monkeys back. But even more, look at the advantage to you of what's just happened here. And I'm playing your role. I went to work on a Saturday morning, committed to put in 2 days of subordinate imposed time. I met the Blythe spirit. She converted me to a pro. Came back Monday, gave them their monkeys back. Now I've gotten rid of these 2 days of subordinate imposed time and transformed them into 2 days of a kind of time that is the most vital kind of time you can ever have in your whole career. And I won't even bother to define this word, discretionary time, because I know the vernacular has us in complete rapport with what that means. Now, yeah, I got 2 days of discretionary time. What do I do ahead of me? What do I do with this 2 days of discretionary time? I want to suggest to you 4 things as a career strategy. Number one, take part of this discretionary time and invest it with your boss. What for? To do your work in such a way as to get your boss's anxieties down to the point where you can handle your own monkeys and your boss won't be telling you what to do and constricting your freedom. It takes discretionary time to develop and implement a strategy with your boss. But watch this. Let's put this freedom scale back up here. The higher you go on your freedom scale, the more discretion you've got in your work. And the more discretion you've got in your work, the more discretionary time you have. So as you invest discretionary time with your boss, you create discretionary time in return. And this is what electrical engineers call a regenerative feedback cycle, where you invest discretionary time to get more in return. Now, number two, invest some of this newfound discretionary time with the system. And by that I mean everybody else in the station and the network that you work with, other than your boss and your subordinates. The more rapport you have with the people you work with, the less time it takes you to get a given job done. And you find that? Yeah. It takes time to build rapport. You know, write notes and thank yous, do whatever it is that turns somebody on and build rapport. But the more rapport you get, the more discretion they'll give you in your work, the less time it takes you to do something. So you're creating a discretionary time again. There you got another regenerative feedback cycle. Now, as you get these two cycles going, after some amount of time, you one day find you've got a small surplus of discretionary time. What do you do with it? Excuse me, with that? Then I suggest you do what we professional bosses and managers are paid to do, and invest some of the time with yourself to do what? Things like plan, organize, lead, control, coach, direct, coordinate, all those things we're paid to do. Now, and they require discretionary time. But four, invest some of this discretionary time with your subordinates, with them. You see, now I got time for my subordinates. But Friday, what's this? Friday I had no time for them. But now Monday, I got plenty of time for them, but they got no time for me. Now, this is something you've got to get used to, too. See, I'm sitting in my office Monday afternoon. I haven't seen these people all day. They're out handling their own monkeys. I got lonely. And it overcame me. And just about the time it did, who should I see go by my door but Bobby? And I'm so lonely, I reached out there and pulled her in with my shepherd's crook. I said, "Bobby, Bobby, isn't there something I can help you with?" She said, "Maybe later when I got more time." See, she's too busy to be helped. But at least if I can help her, I got a little time to do it. See? Now, I am in no way suggesting you get rid of time with your subordinates. What I'm suggesting you get rid of is subordinate-imposed time. But what's the connection between those two? The more you get rid of subordinate-imposed time, the more time you will have for your subordinates and the less time they will have for you. And that is a measure of self-reliance. Aim for the ideal of always having more time for your people than they have for you. I'll bet many of you have had a boss in here, like I had one time. A boss, let's say it's Mary here. She is so busy, I can't get in to see her. And when I finally do get in there, I feel guilty about taking up her time. And Mary tells me one thing in words, but something entirely different in actions. In words, she says the thing she thinks she's supposed to say. She says, "Come on in, Hal. My time is your time. Anything, what's on your mind?" But in her deeds and actions, what does she tell me? She tells me she got no time for me. She keeps on working while I'm talking to her. She looks at her watch and sees the thing's running and all that kind of thing. That's frustrating. Don't do that to your people. Have more time for them than they got for you, and there are two ways to go about that. Number one, expand the amount of time you got for them. And number two, contract the amount of time they've got for you. That's called self-reliance on the part of your subordinates. Now, you may even want to keep up with it. And I'll suggest if you do, you can do something like this. Sometime when your subordinates come into your office about a work-related problem, if they have to leave your office because they ran out of time, make a mark in the them column. If your subordinates have to leave your office because you ran out of time, make a mark in the me column. Now, real quickly, if the quality of your relationship with your subordinates is improving, which column should be gaining on the other? The them, sure. And that is a measure of self-reliance. Not the only measure, but a doggone good one. Let's get back to Monday. Watch these monkeys leap. You got to bat them back. Watch this. Sitting in my office Monday afternoon, doing my own thing. I got time to do my four things. These people working on their monkeys. Remember Lorraine's simple job, deal those cards into two piles? Well, Monday afternoon, Lorraine is sitting in her office playing solitaire with the piles. So, about 3 o'clock, she runs into a problem. What have I taught Lorraine to do in the past when she's got a problem? Come to see me. Because I've taught her that I'll take her problems away from her and do them myself. So she got a problem dealing the cards. She gets up out of her office, and by Pavlovian reflex, comes up to my office. She gets up there. She sees that my door is open. Now, I'm in there, but from where she's standing, she can't see me. And she's never seen my door open and be in there, so she assumes I'm away on a field trip. She says to my secretary, "Hey, Mabel, where is Burroughs?" Mabel says, "Lorraine, he's right in there." And Lorraine is so surprised. She said, "Well, when could I see him?" Mabel says, "Go on in. He's just sitting there. He ain't doing nothing." Now, this is another thing you got to get used to. There'll be times when you're sitting in your office doing what you're paid to do, this highly cerebral stuff, plan, organize, lead, and control. Be sitting in your office, feet up on your desk, doing that stuff. People are going to pass by and think you're doing what? Nothing. And maybe your boss is one of these people, George. He could say, "George, don't you have anything to do? You got to be ready. What are you going to tell him?" Yeah, I say, "Look, boss, it took me 18 months of hard work to get them feet up there. Now, you leave me alone. I'm busy." Now, if you say it to your boss like that, it'll make your boss nervous. And Benjamin Franklin's grandfather once said, "It's hell to work for a nervous boss, especially if you're the one who's making him nervous." Look, talk your boss. And when you're trying to sell somebody something, talk their advantage. Your boss understands his advantage a lot better than he does yours. Say, "Look, boss, let me leave my feet up here and do what I'm paid to do, and I'll help you get your feet up there and do what you're paid to do." Watch how this works. Now, watch these monkeys leap. Lorraine comes in. When I see her Monday afternoon, I realize how lonely I had been. I hadn't seen anybody all day. And I greeted her much like Livingston must have greeted Stanley when he came out of the woods. I said, "Lorraine, can it be you? Come on in, Lorraine. Have a seat. Have a cup of coffee. Let's start at the beginning. How's her husband and kids?" She said, "Hell, I don't have time for this kind of bullshit." See, she got work to do. I said, "Now, Lorraine, I didn't mean to waste your time. What's on your mind?" She said, "I'll tell you what's on my mind, Hal." She said, "I dealt all of those cards into the two piles like you asked me, all except one. I just don't know which pile that last card goes into, yours or mine." She said, "Hal, which pile would you put that one in?" Ah, the monkey's in midair. There it comes. I said, "Now, wait a minute, Lorraine. Maybe this meeting would go better if we had a ground rule. Here's the rule. The monkey will go out of this office the same way it came in, on your back. Understood?" She said, "Yes, sir." Now, see, I learned that as a basic law of physics. Hope you remember this. When output equals input, there's no accumulation. I said, "Understood, Lorraine?" She said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Good." She said, "Which pile would you deal that one in, Burroughs?" I said, "Wait a minute, Lorraine, you didn't understand the rule. Let me state it a different way. Whose problem did we set this up as, whose job, to deal the cards into the two piles? Yours or mine?" She said, "Hers." And I said, "You want me to help you with your problem, right?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Lorraine, I love to help people with problems. That's my job. And I'll help you with this one if I can. At least I got a little time to do it. But here's the rule, Lorraine. At no time while I'm helping you with your problem will your problem become my problem. Because, Lorraine, the minute your problem becomes my problem, you no longer got a problem. And I can't help a gal who ain't got a problem." And I love to help people. I said, "Understood?" She said, "Yes, I finally understand, Burroughs." I said, "Good." She said, "Which pile would you deal that one in?" I said, "Now, wait a minute, Lorraine. Here's the ground rule. The decision as to which pile that card goes in will be made in your office not mine. Understood? She said, I finally understand, Hal. I said, good. She said, which pie would you deal out with? Well, I'm a human being. I'm so curious as to what's on that card. I took it. Now, I know it's her monkey. I'm going to give it back to her, but I want to see what's on it. I looked at that card, and I realized I don't know which pile it goes in either. What this says is there are times when you will not be able to help your subordinates all they'd like. I said, Lorraine, I don't know which pile it goes in either. She said, does that mean you can't help me? I said, oh, no, Lorraine. Although I don't know which pile it goes in, I know something that may be of some help to you. I know which pile I would put it in if I were in your shoes. She said, which one? I said, Lorraine, if I were in your shoes, I would deal that card into the boss's pile. She said, thank you, Hal. Grabbed that card out the door she went. I said, where are you going, Lorraine? She said, oh, I'm going to go deal it in your pile. I said, wait a minute. Remember the ground rule? That decision would be made in your office, not mine. She said, yeah, but Hal, you said if you were in my shoes, you'd deal that into the boss's pile. I said, that's right, Lorraine, I did say that. But I want to remind you that I am not now in your shoes. And I have no immediate career plans in that direction. I said, so, Lorraine, I'm going to be waiting with bated breath and contracted sphincter to know which pile you put that on. See that monkey leap at me and leap at me? You got to bat the monkey. How can you coach somebody with a monkey if they got no monkey? Before we go any further, don't get me wrong. I am not saying that a boss should kick down every monkey. Listen, in your organization, in Cosmos, if every boss kicked down every monkey, where would all the monkeys be in 2 hours? At the very bottom. That would be a disaster. I mean, not enough people down there to handle all the monkeys. What I'm saying is, you only kick down the monkeys that should be kicked down. In other words, Gary should handle some. I should handle some of them. Some my boss should handle. What I'm saying, of course, is every monkey has a home room. Some belong in his home room, some belong in mine. But you know what monkeys love to do better than anything in this world? They love to climb, climb, climb. And I won't even tell you this. I'll ask you from your own observation. In most organizations you've seen, where are most of the monkeys usually? In their home rooms, above their home rooms, or below their home rooms? So often the decisions, et cetera, and the work gets done at a higher level than it ever should be. And you can tell if you're in a monkey climbing organization. Here's how you can tell. See, if the monkeys are climbing in a pyramidal work organization like we're all in, then the higher the monkeys go, the fewer people there are at the top to handle the monkeys. And you can tell if you're in a monkey climbing organization by standing at the front door one night after work and see who goes home first. People at the bottom of the organization chart or people at the top? Usually the people at the bottom so often. This is not proper division of labor. So I bat the monkey back. Now I want to show you some coaching in the brief time we have remaining. She comes back in Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock, like I asked her. I said, hi, Lorraine. You got the pile? She said, I got them bad. I said, let's see what you did. You know what she did? 3 cards in her pile, 13 cards in mine. I tell you, I wanted to strangle her to death. But the blithe spirit whispered in my ear, said, Burroughs, you're in the business of building people up, not tearing them down. Be patient. So I said, okay. So I said, gee whiz, Lorraine, 3 in yours, 13. This is very interesting. That's a perfectly true statement. Interesting. It's just a hell of an understatement. It's incredible is what it is. But we can start from here. I said, Lorraine, would you do me a favor? Would you look through your pile of 3 cards and remove from it the card bearing the decision in most urgent need of attention? So we can start on most important things first. She said, okay. So she looks through there. She pulls one out. I said, Lorraine, I hope you realize what you just did when you pulled that card out of your pile. She said, what? I said, you just created a vacancy in your pile. I said, now, Lorraine, would you please look through my pile of 13 and select a suitable replacement to fill that vacancy in your pile? And right away, she knows it's going to happen 12 more times. Right? I ask you, how many cards is she going to leave my office with? 16, unless an emergency comes up. And then sometimes you got to work on your subordinates' monkeys. Now then, let me show you some coaching quickly. She pulled a card out. Now, I said, Lorraine, tell me something. With regard to that card you pulled out in most urgent need of attention, tell me something. By when could you have me a recommendation on that one? She said, well, Hal, with everything else I got to do, this one is going to take at least 3 weeks. I said, 3 weeks? I didn't know there was a 3-week decision in that whole pile. Let me see that thing. And reflexively, I grabbed it. And I knew I shouldn't have, but now I know I'm going to give it back to her. But while I got it, I want to see what's on it. I looked at that thing and I had to smile. Because here I recognized an old friend. I've been trying to make this decision for 9 months. Even though I could do it in 30 minutes. I mean, a woman could have a baby in the time I've been trying to make this 30-minute decision. Why have I been trying 9 months? I ain't had the 30 minutes. Here is a classic management dilemma been faced by everybody in this room, I'll bet. She wants 3 weeks to make a decision. I could make in 30 minutes if I had the 30 minutes. Let me show you how tough this one can be. Watch this. Lorraine hasn't made any decisions in a long time. Therefore, she's not very good at it. So let me show you the value expressed numerically of the first decision recommendation she'll probably come up with. Here's what she'll come up with. Now, that's a perfectly good number. Mathematicians have a name for that. They call that next to nothing. However, what if I take the thing? Seeing as how I haven't done anything in 9 months, what do you think I'll be likely to do in 3 more weeks? Nothing. So now this is nothing. We have to figure out how much better is next to nothing than nothing. And you do that by comparative analysis. You divide that out, and you engineers, what do you get? Mathematicians. I heard somebody say it, infinity. Now, you liberal arts people wonder how we did that. Did that in their heads. See, I tell you, understanding this is vital to a management career. Watch closely. What is one times nothing? Nothing. Which says that next to nothing is at least one times bigger than nothing. What is a million times nothing? Nothing. That says next to nothing is at least a million times bigger than nothing. An infinite number times nothing is still nothing, which says that next to nothing is infinitely bigger than nothing, which says that anything Lorraine might come up with in 3 weeks will be infinitely more than what I would come up with in 3 weeks, and nobody can turn down a deal like that. You got it, Lorraine. So, I give it to her, you know. I leap ahead in my desk calendar 3 weeks, and I say, be here, Lorraine will be in with a recommendation. Well, off she goes. Now, watch this very human behavior. She comes in the first week, still a victim of her past habits, looking for help. Now, help is not really what she's looking for. That's what she thinks she's looking for. What she's really looking for is to get my fingerprints on her murder weapon. You know, get me to do her work. But I tell you, help is all she gets. I won't do anything for her that she should be doing for herself. That's what I mean by help. Now, of course, she, like you, like I, she's always making cost-benefit analyses of the time she's spending with me versus the results she's getting, the help she's getting. And pretty soon she figured it out. Help ain't all it's been cracked up to be. So the first week I saw her pretty frequently. The second week her visits trailed off in frequency. Third week I hardly saw her at all, but in the third week she came in and she's got her recommendation. She gave it to me. This is the first one she's done in a long time. It was typewritten. And to show you how much confidence Lorraine has in her own first effort, it was triple spaced. I looked at that thing and that scared me to death. And to thank goodness I said, now, Lorraine, by the way, Lorraine, have you seen accounting about this? And she said, who are they? And I said, I had to tell her, this is called coaching now. I said, Lorraine, if you were to see accounting, I'd tell her where they are. They could give you some help over here and give you a whole new set of numbers here. That changes the set of numbers down here. And this is called coaching. I help her all I can short of what she should do herself. When I finish after about 15 minutes, I say, Lorraine, by when would you have seen accounting? She said, this afternoon. I said, good. I leaf ahead in my calendar again. I put this on my calendar for follow-up. It's called Stewardship of Organizational Resources. I say, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, be here. Lorraine will be back with recommendation mod 2. She comes back in the next day with it, gives it to me. I look at it, and I want to build her up, but I tell you the most generous thing I think to say about it the second day is, it's different. I said, Lorraine, have you seen the legal people about this? She said, wait a minute, Burroughs. Are you trying to tell me this thing is wrong? I said, wrong, Lorraine? That's such a feeble description of it. Yeah, Lorraine, I'm afraid it's wrong. She said, well, then, what right? The monkey's in midair again. See that? What's right? That's ask what to do. The most prolific source of upward-leaping monkeys there is. I said, now, Lorraine, if I knew what was right, what would I need you for? Oh, boy, she's never been talked to like this. All of a sudden, she's upset, and I can see her teeth are clenched. I can count her heartbeat by the palpitations of her temples. I can spot the onset of an emotional breakdown. And these things are messy, especially when they happen in your office. So I said, now, look, Lorraine, now, look, you know, our roles could easily have been reversed. You know, the only reason I got this job is when they picked a boss, you were away on vacation. I mean, and we're both just bundles of strengths and weaknesses. So I said, no, now, Lorraine, look, I don't like to dote on weaknesses, so let me tell you about my strengths. I said, Lorraine, I've got this uncanny ability, this strength, to spot wrong decisions. Made this company millions of dollars by spotting wrong ones. The only problem is, Lorraine, I have never been able to come up with a right one. Now, that's my strength, spotting wrong decisions. Let's talk about your strengths. Now, you're young. I'm 41 years old. Would have been 42, but I was sick one year. I said, let's talk about your strengths, Lorraine. You remember last month when I filled out your performance appraisal? Over on page 3, it had a little block over there that says, list subordinate strengths. You remember what I put in there for you? Lorraine hasn't picked one yet. Now, Lorraine, since you're currently unencumbered with strengths, why don't we pick one for you? I got the ability to spot wrong decisions. What if you were to develop the ability to come up with the right one? See what a team we'd make? She's, Now, see, I don't say that to be facetious. Listen to this. Who should know her job better than anybody on this planet? If not now, at least soon. She should. Therefore, she is in a better position to make right decisions and recommendations. I do happen to be in a better position to know how her recommendations relate with my other subordinates and my boss and his or her subordinates. Well, this is how this thing happens. Every day she comes in there. The academicians call it coaching. I call it ping pong. Every day she comes in there at 9 o'clock in my office, ping that monkey over to me. I help her with it, short of what she should do herself. Ping it back to her. She walks out with it. Goes out and exercises a monkey, you know, flexes little muscles, force-feeds it a little milk, slurp, slurp, slurp. Brings it back the next day. Ping pong, ping pong. This is what I call coaching. May last 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months, but let's assume that after some number of pings and pongs, Lorraine has turned into what I knew she would, a super pro on this project. And she comes in on like the 19th ping. Remember, she's a super pro now on this one. Pings that thing over to me. I look at it. It's something I can buy. As a matter of fact, it's beautiful. And my eyes light up, and with tears in her voice, she said, Hal, you don't mean to tell me that thing is right, do you? I said, I don't know, Lorraine. That's your specialty, what's right. I can tell you this. It ain't wrong. Now, that's exaggerated. You'd never treat your people that crudely, I hope. If you treat your people like I have in this exaggeration, you're going to be leaving people in your wake who are keeping score on you, and you'll get what you deserve. You'll walk away from one of them one day, and you'll feel blood trickling down your trouser leg. No, you just watch the principle behind this coaching. Here's what this thing is all about. What I've been trying to do is invest a little time coaching, counseling, training, getting him to the point where he can be a pro like the Blessed Spirit, hoping that on the next one of these, my coaching time won't take so long. It's an investment that paid off in a pro. So I'd like to close this thing by telling you something I heard recently. We bosses, we're coaches, we're counselors, we're trainers, we're mostly teachers, and you lead by your example. You teach people more by your example than you do by your words. And I think the person who's been in the public eye, who was a super manager, super trainer, coach, teacher, was the late Vince Lombardi. And you've heard a lot about him. Coached the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, he took a team, which was an also-ran, and using the same people, basically, turned it into a powerhouse for years. And I heard one of those team members give a speech one time, and here's what he said. He said he's out there on the field one day and said, Lombardi came up to him and kicked him in the rear in front of all the other people and said to him, you are the lousiest ball player I've ever seen. I can't bear to watch it. Get off the field. Go get dressed. Guy went in the dressing room and he said in his speech that he was in the pits. He didn't know if his career was over or what. Lombardi came in and put his arm around him and said, look, you were the lousiest player I've ever seen, but you can be great if you give your best. And you weren't giving your best. Now, Lombardi says, everything has its price. Benjamin Franklin's grandfather said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And Lombardi told this guy, said, the price of mediocrity is loss of self-respect. He said, if you permit yourself to be mediocre, you're going to look back 10 years from now and know it, and you will hate yourself for wasting your life. If I permit you to be mediocre, I'll look back and I'll hate myself, and we'll hate each other for allowing it to happen. And Lombardi says, I want to be your friend, and I want to see you be great, and that's why I'm going to work hell out of you. See you tomorrow. The guy's name, you probably read his book or books, and Jerry Kramer became an all-pros all-pro. You see, Lombardi was just like you and me in management. He became great by making his people great. Management is getting things done through others. You can only be great in management by making other people great. Well, you've been great. Talking about being great, you've been great. Matter of fact, you couldn't have been better to me if I'd died. And I really enjoyed it. And a matter of fact, so much that I'm going to feel guilty about taking the money. If you believe that, I got some hand-painted neckties in my suitcase up here. But I haven't, so I want to wish you a really good remainder of the convention, a safe home, a good career, and look out for them monkeys.